believe in precautionary measures, but to live in fear is something else altogether. The people of God have never been designed or built to live in fear. Many people, and I know this is a real world, many of you here in the auditorium today, many of you watching, I know it's an issue at your house. Some are facing sickness, illness, disease. This pandemic has brought close to all of our homes somebody who's been affected, and some of us have been down that journey. And so at a time when there is so much uncertainty and an unleashing of fear, let's remember who we are. We are the people of God, and we walk by faith. We don't live in fear. And even though in the natural, it appears that our future is uncertain, giving us our promised future is still God's plan. He has a future He's promised each of us. It goes way back thousands of years to our spiritual forefathers, our ancestors in the faith. Back in the day of Moses, he was God's man and led God's people for 40 years closer and closer and closer to the promised future God had given them. And then the day came when Moses died. Imagine what that was like for the people of God. The voice you had heard speak louder than any other voice in your lifetime has been silenced. The man whose footsteps you followed in for 40 years has now been gone. The shocking reality that the structure that you've always depended on in an earlier season of your life is no longer an option moving forward. But God always has a new season for His people. And this is a call to courage. Now, sometimes we need courage to stay when it's easier to leave. Sometimes we need courage to leave when it's easier to stay. Now, even though Moses was dead, God had already prepared Joshua. And when Moses died, the man that God had prepared to take Moses' place, Joshua, had a conversation with God. God showed up and told Joshua, "Arise and lead all my people across this great Jordan River. Lead them to the land I am giving to them." And then God made tremendous promises to Joshua. Like, every place the sole of your feet will touch in this new season, I will give it to you. Like, God said, no man will be able to stand up against you all of the days of your life. Good promise. God has promises for a bright future, even in uncertain times in the natural. Another promise God made to Joshua is He said, just like I was with Moses, I will be with you and I will never leave you nor forsake you. And then God threw this in to the conversation He was having with Joshua. God said to Joshua something that He's saying to His people today all over the planet. God said to Joshua, be strong and of good courage. Joshua 1:6. Be strong and of good courage. The fear you're facing, the uncertainty we're all facing about the future of our life, our nation, our world. We need to hear these words as a mandate from God in a fresh way. God is telling His people all over the world today, be strong and of good courage. Now, there are people who need this word because they're afraid to open their front door and go out in the yard. Fear of things that are uncertain right now. Wherever we are in our life and on our journey, today's the day to be infused anew with strength and courage. Now, when you step into your new season and take possession of your promised future, God will be with you and never leave you nor forsake you. Now, we have two choices. We can have courage. The only other option, if we don't take courage and be strong, the only other option is discouragement. Anybody ever been discouraged? Do you know what that feels like? How awful it is to settle into consistent, long-term discouragement. Webster's dictionary defines discouragement as a loss of confidence or enthusiasm. Oh, so many people need to hear the word, be strong and of good courage today. Discouragement is also contagious. It's a contagion like coronavirus. It will spread to those who are in close contact with you. Discouragement infected many of God's people under Moses' leadership. And when Joshua took the lead of God's people after Moses died, discouragement infected many who never realized their promised future. And you know the story. It's a familiar one. Joshua is now the man. It's a new day. God has given Joshua and all of the children of Israel a word, be strong and take good courage. You're at the border of the promise. You're on the brink of your promised future, God said. And so Joshua, he's the man now. Joshua sent 12 spies across the border into the land God had promised His people. You know this story as well as I do. Joshua said to these 12 spies, go in and see what the land is like. See whether the people who live there are strong or if they're weak. See if there are just a few people in the land we've got to deal with, or if there are many adversaries there. And then Joshua said, and bring us back some of the fruit they grow in the land. So these 12 spies go in to the future promise God had given them. And they did see fruit. They saw, in fact, brought back one cluster of grapes that was so big and so heavy it took two men to carry one cluster of grape on a pole on their shoulders. Oh, they saw milk and honey. They saw houses that were well built. And these 12 spies came back after 40 days and showed Joshua and the people, look at this cluster of grapes. Have you ever seen fruit this good? It's all there in the promised future God has made us. Oh, and the soil is rich. Anything can grow over there. It's a much better land than this wilderness we've been wandering around in for 40 years. Houses are nice. We can move in. We won't even have to build our own. There are already wells dug with great water flowing from them. We won't have to build a house to live in. We won't have to dig a well to drink water from. It's a land of abundance, just like God promised. But, they said, the people there are strong, and there are many of them. Their cities are large, and their cities are fortified, and we saw giants in the land. We saw giants there. And you know the story that of the 12 spies Joshua sent, only two came back with the attitude of, let's believe God and let's possess His promise. Now is the time we can do this. And 10 of the 12 were trembling in their boots, saying, there's no way we can conquer the giants and take possession. Are you that way right now? Do you remember a promise God has made you? At one time He made you a promise for a future that was amazing. And perhaps your memory of that promise has been dulled by circumstances in life. And it's left you at a place today to where you're doubting that you're even able to go in and take possession of your promised future that God has given you. What giants are you facing? In Numbers chapter 13, beginning at verse 30, it said, then Caleb, he was one of the two spies that brought back a faith-filled report. Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land which we've gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak came from the giants. And we were like, listen at the way this is worded, we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. That's what they thought of themselves. And so we were in their sight. Refresher. Your enemy will see you most of the time the way you see your own self. We were like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so that's the way the giants looked at us, as if we were grasshoppers. And oh, did I mention they devour their inhabitants? This is a call to courage to take possession of our promised future. All of us have one. We just sang the words in a beautiful praise and worship course. I know your thoughts toward me. They are for good. Oh, we have a promised future. There comes a time, though, when we have to take possession of it. And there are enemies to courage. Some courage blockers, some courage killers. We need to be aware of just a few enemies to the courage we've been told we must have. Be strong and of good courage. The first enemy of courage is an exaggerated assessment of the enemy. What do you think about your enemy? An exaggerated assessment of your enemy. If you have an exaggerated idea of the strength of your enemy, it will stop you in your track. You will be paralyzed with fear and unable to take another step forward. And here was their mindset, these 10 spies that came back doubting their promised future. Oh, the giants will eat us for lunch. If not for breakfast, but by lunch. They devour people like us over there. Oh, I see all the good, the possibilities. Yes, it's obvious. It's all God said it would be, but fear instead of courage. I don't have enough faith to match the risk I'm facing, they thought. But courage is faith taking a risk. An exaggerated assessment of your enemy. Can I tell you what a prophet said about Lucifer? He's the ultimate enemy. Lucifer, you can read about it in Isaiah 14. There's Lucifer, the devil that so many people walk on eggshells around, don't want to upset the devil. He's so powerful, they think. The prophet Isaiah said about the devil, when Lucifer is brought down to hell, those who see him will say, is this the man that made the earth tremble? Who shook kingdoms and who would not release his prisoners? Is this the man who did all that? How pitiful is the devil if you see him through the eyes of courage. So, an exaggerated assessment of the enemy is one courage killer. Don't inflate your enemy at any level. The second enemy of courage is a diminished assessment of yourself. Many times we get way off base simply because we have forgotten who we are. After all, we are the children of God. We're King's kids. And that's a permanent position for eternity. So we need to remember whose brand we wear in this life. God, the Holy Spirit, has put his seal on us. And when he laid claim on each of us and sealed us with his Spirit, it was like that seal of the Spirit is just the first payment, just the down. It's earnest money. When you were born again and the Holy Spirit sealed you, it was like God promising, you're mine as of this moment, as of this seal. You belong to me. You're my property. And this seal I put on your life is just earnest money. It's a guarantee from God that every promise I've made to you, your promised future is reality, and it's worth taking courage to fight for it. So don't forget who you are. We're told in Scripture not to think more highly of ourselves than we ought, but we're never told not to think highly of ourselves. We are God's people. In 1 Samuel chapter 15, this truth is told about Saul, who was king of Israel. And the prophet came to him, beginning in verse 17, and Samuel the prophet told King Saul, although you may think little of yourself, oh my, are you not the leader of the tribes of Israel? The Lord has anointed you king of Israel. Sometimes when you're facing an uncertain future and fear has a grip on you, it's easy to forget what we've been called to do, what we've been anointed to do. And one mistake is not thinking too much of our own self. The next verse says, and the Lord sent you on a mission. Do you know if you have a heartbeat right now, your purpose is not finished, your mission is not over? The reason you're here on planet Earth is designed by God with great purpose and intention. And if you still have breath in your lungs and a heartbeat happening in your chest, you need to hear those words again. The Lord has sent you on a mission, and it's not over yet. So a couple of things that will rob you of the courage necessary to possess your promised futures: an exaggerated assessment of the enemy, a diminished assessment of yourself, and thirdly, fear of what other people will think of you. Aren't we all tempted to be slaves to that one from time to time. Fear of what other people will think of you. In 1 Samuel chapter 15 and verse 24, then Saul the king admitted to the prophet Samuel, "Yes, I've sinned, I've disobeyed your instructions and the Lord's command, for I was afraid of the people and did what they demanded." People pleaser rather than God pleaser. Fear of what other people think of you. Another courage buster. And then I have one final enemy to courage. And that is, and I like this one, it's just so true, failure to remember God's faithfulness. Failure to remember His faithfulness. Whenever I need a miracle, and I've needed some, one thing that encourages me is remembering the many things God has already brought me through. And it's intrinsic in human nature. We just inherit it from Adam and sinful nature, how forgetful we are of God's goodness and His faithfulness to us. Now, there's a revival right there. We can camp right there and have global revival if we do nothing but remember and celebrate and thank God the way He deserves to be thanked for being so faithful to us all of our life. Oh, now I know, life. There's a bumper sticker that says, "It happens." It's life. Life is that way. But in spite of life on earth, God comes through for His people, and we should never forget. We should never forget how faithful He's been. I'll tell you, the disciples were with Jesus when He performed all of His miracles. Imagine being one of the 12 in His closest inner circle, hearing every word He said, watching every miracle He performed. You're that close to Him. And they participated in one of the greatest miracles. That was the multiplying of a little bit of fish and a little bit of bread to feeding a crowd of 5,000 people. And the disciples helped distribute that miracle. And after the meal was over, on the same day, Jesus said to His disciples, "Get in the boat and go over to the other side." And when they were in the boat, crossing the river, a storm came up. And they had forgotten already the power Jesus had just displayed earlier that same day. They were in fear for their life. And a revelation is found in Mark chapter 6 and verse 52. It describes the disciples that day, the very same day, the miracle of the loaves and fishes had occurred. And now they had forgotten how good God is. And the Bible verse says, "For they considered not the miracle of the loaves, for their heart was hardened." Now, quickly we forget, God came through for me last week. Oh, I'm facing another challenge now. But God always comes. I'm telling you, I'm standing here, I'm not going to tell you how old I am, because I don't like it myself. But I'm just saying, God has brought me through every single thing I've ever been through in my few years of a young life. He's brought me through everything. Look at your own self. He's brought you, you're here, aren't you? He's brought you through everything. And thank God He gives us time Time is what keeps everything from happening at once. I'm glad I didn't go through everything I've been through on the same day. But all the time, God is good, and He's brought all of us through everything we've ever been through. But now the closest ones to Him, the disciples, had forgotten about the miracle that happened at noon. And here it is, 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and their heart is so hardened that they had forgotten the miracle Jesus had just performed. The Passion Translation said they failed to learn the lesson of the miracle of the loaves, and their hearts were unwilling to learn the lesson. The Amplified Bible, it's a little wordy, but listen. They had not understood the miracle of the loaves, how it revealed the power and deity of Jesus. But in fact, their hearts were hardened, being oblivious and indifferent to His amazing works. Now, this is a call to courage. Something on the inside of each of us needs to stand up and say, God has promised me a future, and I'm going to possess it. Now, when I'm in need of a miracle, I remember the times before when I needed one, and God delivered. When I was 12 years old, I went with a church group of men and boys fishing one Saturday. Went to the ocean, it was the Atlantic Ocean. And we were so excited about, maybe 3 or 4 dozen men and teenage boys going fishing on a Saturday. It was a church men's gathering. And there was a rip current in the water, and we were all walking out and holding on to a net. And somehow I lost grip of the net in maybe waist-deep water. And suddenly, I was washed way out. I couldn't believe how quickly the undercurrent carried me so far away from the group and so far away from the land. So quickly it happened, I could not help myself. I was being washed out to sea, and I was powerless over the rip current. I remember doing the best I could to swim and even to stretch to get air, and I remember the first wave or two that came over me, and I lost my breath, and I passed out. I lost consciousness, and the last thought I had before I went unconscious was, my mama and daddy will get a call in just a little bit that I have drowned. And then I was unconscious. I was as good as dead. And the next thing I remember is when I came back to consciousness, I was lying on the seashore, and my eyes blinked, and I looked up, and all these men that were in the church group that day were staring down at me praying. And they told me that it just so happened that while I was lost out there at sea and they couldn't even see me any longer, a Coast Guard ship just happened to come by and rescued me and brought me back and laid me out on the sand unconscious. That's where I was when I came back to myself. Whenever I need a miracle, I remember. I remember. Early in my adult life, I was on a plane to Jamaica with 7 or 8 pastors. And I was in my mid-20s maybe, and it was a turbulent flight. I can't believe they even allowed the plane to take off from Miami headed to Kingston, Jamaica for a crusade, some services down there. And I was the little young man on the, all the rest were seasoned pastors and evangelists, and we were going down to Jamaica and excited about all that was going to happen down there, and the weather was bad, and I remember looking out the window on the plane and lightning striking all around, and then in the middle of the flight, the plane dropped 600 feet. It was like the bottom was taken out, and it just fell like that, and everybody knew we were falling like that. It was not a nosedive. It was a falling like that, 600 feet. And then it leveled off, and it was hard to hit the bottom on that one. It leveled off. It was so graphic, like a scene you would see out of a movie, that one of the flight attendants, a lady, was walking down the aisle when the fall happened. And the fall caused her to hit one of the armrests on an aisle seat and hit her mouth and her nose, and blood was coming out. And we looked and said, "Oh my God, and are we okay? Is it going to fall anymore, or was that it?" And then within about 30 seconds, the pilot came running out of the cockpit down the aisle and looked at her, and instead of saying, "Oh my God, can I help you? Is there a nurse or a doctor on board that can help her?" he looked at her and said, profanely, I won't use the colorful language he used, but told her to get herself in a seatbelt. He would later, just a few minutes later, come on the speaker and tell all the passengers that weather and the plane had fallen 600 feet. That's how we knew how many feet. Well, I was with a few other pastors, and there was like maybe eight of us, and five out of us eight got saved again all over right there. That was probably my worst experience on a plane, but I thanked God for getting me through that. When I need a miracle, I remember. And then we spent 1 year, my family and I, in what was the former Soviet Union. And of course, I was of age, as many of you were, that we branded the Soviet Union as the evil empire. All of us on this side of the planet were afraid of that place over there because it's the evil empire. And then all of a sudden, God opened the door and many nations were freed in one single day for the gospel to come in. It was a new day. It was part of their promised future. And God was going to see to it that it happened. That led to my family and I moving over there. And for 1 year, we lived in what had been called the evil empire. And we had to deal with the mafia. The mafia in the city we lived in mandated what buildings we could rent and which ones we could not. And they would not let us stay in the same building long. And so we became accustomed to that. And then also the mafia over there, it was just awful. But they had my car title. I did buy a $2,000 car that year. But the mafia got my car title because one member of the church there owed them money, and they brought him to my office and demanded money. And I told them, "I don't have the money." And so they took my car title and had it for 3 months. And then the first month we were living there, we were asleep in the middle of the night, and an explosion went off in the middle of the night. The sky lit up outside the windows, and we quickly rushed and looked out and didn't see anything then. But the next morning, as I left the apartment building, walking down the street, I saw one block from our apartment building the mafia again had exploded a little business on the first floor of a building, street level. And they did that to intimidate business owners who were trying to start business. I mean, they were free to start their own private business now. But if you didn't pay 10% to the mafia every month, they would cut off a hand or a finger, literally, or kill you. In fact, we lived about 3 or 4 blocks from the canal. There was a bridge over it, and a taxi driver, his body was found in the canal because he would not pay what the mafia was requiring. But all of that, God got us through. And not only did he get us through, we had a lot of fun. It was just, we have great memories. I don't think of the bad stuff nearly as much as I remember the good things God did for us that year. Then I remember September 11, as we all do. Brenda and I just happened to be at the same airport in Washington, D.C., where one of the hijacked planes took off from the same terminal and the same airline we were flying at the same time. And we had, early that morning, we were sitting at our gate. We had flown all night. We were tired already, but it's 7:30 or whatever in the morning. We got one more flight, Washington to Columbia. We'll be home. We're sitting there, and the first plane hit the tower. And everybody goes, now that's awful. What an awful accident. Horrible. So those at our gate ready to board, we had our boarding pass in our hand. We stood up and went up to the TV, mounted on the wall, and we got closer. And we were all watching when the second plane hit the second tower. And then it was like the whole world knew instantly, this is no accident, this is terrorism. Right here in America. It was about 2 minutes after the second plane hit the tower that security police at that airport ran down the halls and screamed at us at our gate and everybody at every gate and said, "We're under attack. We're evacuating the airport. Get out." And they herded us out like cattle. And not peaceful. In fact, I lost my carry-on. I don't know what happened to it. We were just thrown out, and all we knew is we're under attack. And so when we got to the front door of the airport, as hundreds and hundreds and hundreds were trying to get out of that door, they would not let Brenda and me get a taxi by ourselves. The taxis were, lining up quickly. And they made every taxi pack out. It didn't matter if you were riding together, traveling together, if you knew each other or not. Fill every taxi up and shut the door and squeal the tires and get out of here. So we learned, met a few people. The taxi driver's name was Muhammad. And we would pretty quickly find out that one of the 4 hijacked planes that day had taken off from that very airport, the very terminal, and the same airline we were flying. And it could have been us. When I need a miracle, when I need courage to possess my promised future, I remember. I'm encouraging you today. Look back at your own life. And reconsider and always remember God's track record of faithfulness in your own life. That is a boost always. Sometimes we need courage for the moment. Sometimes there's a window of opportunity, and if your courage is not there, you may never have an opportunity again to possess part of what God has for you. There was a movie we watched a few years ago. It was called I Bought a Zoo, or We Bought a Zoo. Anybody ever seen that movie, We Bought a Zoo? I recommend it. It's a good little movie. And Matt Damon plays the lead character, and he's raising a child or two alone. His wife had died, and they just needed a change of life to get out of where they were and hope for a fresh start and a new beginning against all odds. And so they fell in love with a house, and the only deal was if you bought the house, it came with a zoo. And so that was not appealing to them early on, but they went ahead and did it, and it turned into a great adventure, which led to a love story. But I want to give you a quote from that movie. I recommend you watch it this afternoon. We Bought a Zoo is the name of it. And Matt Damon, the lead character, tells his son this in that movie. And I quote, "Sometimes all you need is 20 seconds of courage. Embarrassing bravery. And I promise you something great will come out of it." Sometimes all you need, 20 seconds of courage. How do you like this? Embarrassing bravery. And I promise you something great will come out of it. I've got a few stories like that to where hit and miss maybe at best down through my life. I did find 20 seconds of courage to do something that was embarrassingly brave. One was the day Brenda remembers. I had met her, and for me it was love at first sight. I fell in love with her upon seeing her. Well, that's not her testimony. It was just mine. And so I positioned myself. I got a job working for her father so I could be around her. All the while, she didn't know I loved her. I couldn't tell her. She didn't know how I felt. And to make it even more complicated, she was wearing an engagement ring. She was engaged to another man. I mean, talk about giants in the land. She was all happy. Here I am, heart skipping a beat every time I see her. I went to work for her daddy so I could see her more. She's engaged to another man. It was awful. I'd see her and her fiancé, you know, going off, getting in the car and going somewhere for, and coming. But I couldn't help myself. So, one afternoon, I went by their house, and Brenda's dad said to me, "Son," now he called me son. He never called me Carl. Even when Brenda was engaged to another man and I had no plan, obviously, to ever be his son, he always called me son. Son. John, he called her John. He had two girls, Sharon and Brenda. He wanted two boys. So he always called his two daughters Joe and John. And so he said to me on this particular afternoon, "Son, John is having a rough day. She and," can I call his name? No. Can I just use another name? "She and Chuck." Names have been changed to protect the innocent. He says to me, "Son, John's having a rough day. She and Chuck broke up today." And I said, "Oh, really? Oh." So it wasn't but an hour or two. Yeah, I gave her time to heal. So I go in the house, in the room where she was, and it was just me and her. And I said, Brenda, I know you've not had time to think even about this, but I cannot leave here without saying this to you today. I am in love with you. I mean, like 2 or 3 hours after she broke up the engagement with her fiancé, and I rushed in. And didn't Elvis sing a song, but wise men say only fools rush in? Well, I was rushing. And so I went in to the room where she was, and I said, I just can't leave without telling you this. I've felt this way since the moment I saw you. I am in love with you. And, of course, she didn't reciprocate. She didn't return it. How many have ever had 20 seconds of courage and you told somebody, I love you, and then it was embarrassing bravery, it turned out. Well, I could have left feeling that way because she certainly did not say, well, I appreciate that, or thanks, or I love you too. And God bless her. She had just broken up with her fiancé. I mean, I understand. What was I thinking? But it was 20 seconds of bravery. Embarrassing bravery. It didn't take long to say it, did it? Just, I got it right. I can't leave without telling you. I cannot leave your house today without telling you. I fell in love with you the first time I saw you, and I am madly in love with you. And so I left feeling great. Great about it. Even though, well, a week later, I saw her again, reminded her of what I said. And I said, I feel like we're meant to be. I feel like the day will come. We will be married. And she said to me, Carl, I like you, but I would not marry you if you were the last man on earth. Did you not? How different my life would have been if I had not summoned 20 seconds of courage and acted on it. Today is a call to courage. God has a promised future for all of us, and regardless of what it might look like or what she said, hold on to the promise. It will surely come to pass. It's been 44 years, and she finally came around. Everybody stand, if you will.